Support for WPR comes from Stafford Rosenbaum, a Wisconsin-based law firm celebrating 145 years of commitment to practical legal solutions in areas such as family law and estate planning. StaffordLaw.com.
Support for WPR comes from the American Society of Landscape Architects Wisconsin Chapter. Dedicated to reimagining the design of outdoor spaces for the well-being of all. Examples at WIASLA.com.
Good morning. It's 9.5 minutes past 6 o'clock. I'm John Munson, sitting in for Joy Cardine here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Joy will be back behind the microphone on Monday. Well, here's a quiz for you. Are you living smart? Answer yes or no to each question and see how you can keep living smart. I eat at least 5 servings of fruits and vegetables every day. I eat at least 3 servings of whole grain bread, rice, pasta, and cereal every day. I drink reduced fat or fat-free milk and yogurt, and I seldom eat high-fat cheeses. I rarely eat processed and red meat like bacon, hot dogs, sausage, steak, ground beef, pork, or lamb. I take it easy on high-calorie baked goods such as pies, cakes, cookies, sweet rolls, and donuts. I rarely add butter, margarine, oil, sour cream, or mayonnaise to foods when I'm cooking or at the table. I rarely, less than twice a week, eat fried foods. I try to maintain a healthy weight. I get at least 30 minutes of moderate to vigorous physical exercise on 5 or more days of the week. I usually take the stairs instead of waiting for an elevator. I try to spend most of my free time being active instead of watching television or sitting at the computer. I never or only occasionally drink alcohol. If you answered yes to all of those questions, well, you go to the head of the class. And it's also suggested that you'll have a much less chance of getting cancer than somebody who maybe answered no to all of those questions. There is research which referred to in the introduction to this program a few minutes ago that suggests that there is a link between being overweight and an increased risk of cancer. And that's what we're going to talk about this hour. You can join our discussion. Let me give you the phone numbers. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. That's a toll-free number. Good anywhere you can hear this program. If you're in Madison, please use 263-1890, 263-1890. And you can even send us an email. The address is talk@wpr.org. Let's welcome our guest, Margaret Allen, oncology dietitian at Columbia St. Mary's. She's a volunteer with the American Cancer Society, and she joins us from Milwaukee. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for getting up at this early hour to talk to us about this important topic.
Well, I'm passionate about the topic, and getting up to talk about it is a pleasure. Thank you again.
Oh, well, I'm glad we're enjoying ourselves already.
Already, yep.
First of all, I'm curious, explain to me, what is an oncology dietitian?
Oh, thank you for asking. I am a registered dietitian who about 28 years ago chose to pursue oncology, which is the practice of cancer, as a passion of mine. I work in several different arenas, cancer risk reduction. I work with cancer patients who are currently undergoing treatment, whether it be surgical, chemotherapy, or radiation therapy, to help them through the treatment process. I also work with survivor groups, and we know now that there are more cancer survivors than there are people being newly diagnosed with cancer. So this whole population has opened up another area for me to be able to intervene with. So today, though, we're actually talking in the cancer risk reduction world, which is one of my very favorite topics.
When this subject was proposed, I have to admit that I was probably one of those 92% of people in the United States who didn't realize that there was a connection between being overweight and a higher risk for cancer. How long have we known this?
Actually, we've known it for quite a while. It's getting the message out to people. obesity, we know, has reached epidemic portions in the United States. There's been a lot in the lay press about that recently. And the American Cancer Society did a study, as one of the figures you quoted. Most Americans, about 83% of Americans, recognize that there is a link between being overweight and heart disease. And about 57% of Americans know there's a link between being overweight and diabetes. And as you said, only 8% of Americans understand that there is a link between obesity and cancer. And as a result, the American Cancer Society took on this challenge and decided to beef up their message, and are now, one of the reasons I'm on the air today is to promote the American Cancer Society Great American Eat Right Challenge, is what we're calling it. So I think, you know, to have the opportunity to publicize and to get the message out, we hope that that rather horrifying, in my world, statistic of 8% recognizing the link, we can improve that. And as we educate people about the importance of achieving a healthy body weight and good eating habits, we can reduce the risk of cancer.
Well, we're going to spend the rest of the hour talking about that, and I'm sure that our listeners will have some questions, and let me invite them once again to get involved here. Here are the numbers to call, 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. That's a toll-free number. If you're in Madison, we'd appreciate it if you would use 263-1890, 263-1890. You can also reach us over the Internet. Send us an email, the address talk@wpr.org. We're talking about cancer prevention through a better or healthier diet and a healthier weight this morning, and you are invited to participate in the discussion. If you've got some experience, you've got some questions, you'd like to know more about how healthy eating can help you reduce your cancer risk, we've got the person for you to talk to right here. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 17 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Friday morning, August the 10th. Well, here's what's coming up later today on Wisconsin Public Radio after 5 on At Issue with Ben Marins. Nearly every day we see someone in the public eye apologizing after they've been caught with their hand in the cookie jar. Are they sorry for what they did or just sorry that they were caught? Well, that's the topic on At Issue after 5 o'clock today with Ben Marins. This hour, we're talking about preventing cancer, and one of the ways that is being touted now in an educational campaign is having a healthier weight, being more active, and eating properly. And we have a guest oncology dietitian who can help us to figure out exactly how to do that. So we're providing some expertise here this morning that you might not have access to as easy through any other medium. Our guest is Margaret Allen, who's oncology dietitian at Columbia St. Mary's, and she's also a volunteer with the American Cancer Society, and she joins us by phone from Milwaukee this morning. Well, just before the weather break, you were talking, we were kind of in general introducing this topic and getting ourselves kind of introduced to this. There's a campaign called the American Cancer Society's Great American Eat Right Challenge. What kind of resources can people access concerning this that will help them to make better choices?
The website is really great. It's a great website. I'm not especially computer literate, and I went on the website yesterday again and went through it and found it's just very easy to navigate. When you get on the website, you can go through checking the Great American Health Check, Moving, which is the Great American Get Active campaign, Nourish, which is the Great American Eat Right Challenge, and then also Quit Smoking, which is the Great American Smoke Out. In each one of these four areas, there's information, tips, there are resources available to anyone interested in any of these areas. So it's a really user-friendly website, and I would encourage anyone who's interested in any of these topics to log on to this website. Or, if they don't have access to a computer, is to call the American Cancer Society.
Why don't you give the web address again?
Okay, the web address is cancer.org/greatamericans. And that will take them directly to the website.
Okay, and we will We'll give that web address again before the end of the program for anybody who didn't get it. Let's take a phone call right now. We'll go to Victor in Milwaukee. Good morning. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. Good morning to your guests. A couple of questions. One is, you know, we all often know that life's decisions begin when we're children. You know, we have to have parents to encourage us to make these right decisions and our school systems. Are we doing anything as far as letting the school systems know from elementary school to high school about making the right choices for, you know, exercising, buying the right foods, avoiding the bad foods? The other question I have is, how can organic foods be made affordable for people who are working poor or poor? Because those are the ones that's really going to be affected. Because, of course, you know, if you're middle income, you know, your tendency, you're going to pick the right choices and you can afford to buy the right foods. But when you're poor or working class, organic foods, there's a premium on them.
Excellent questions, and thank you. With regard to your first question, you know, as children, we definitely rely on our parents to educate us and guide us in making decisions. But I agree the school system is a very significant source of influence. And I think I'd like to say I personally, myself, I do public education in the school system through the American Cancer Society as a volunteer in kind of what we call a take control program, teaching people to make better choices. And there's nothing that I like better than to challenge kids to make better choices. I think, you know, when you present options to them and do it in a format that is fun to learn, kids are like little sponges and they soak it up. So I really am pleased that in the school food system we're seeing more and more of this type of education. And also with the great public outcry about obesity and the fact that it's so much in the news now, I think that school systems are looking at their physical education programs and really encouraging kids to get physically active. I think looking at neighborhood organizations like the YMCA and Big Brothers Big Sisters, I think these excellent organizations that have mentoring for children are also great opportunities to promote, you know, healthy food choices and the get active part of the lifestyle changes. With regard to your second question, and that is the organic issue, I agree wholeheartedly that I wish there were more opportunities for organic foods to be more readily available. But I think understanding there's, I'm going to take a step backward here. And a lot of times I have these discussions with groups that I'm working with, and we know through the Food and Drug Administration that there are more foods that are imported from countries outside the United States that might be more prone to contamination. And these foods are available through the Food and Drug Administration's website. And I will often teach people that they may want to get, for instance, the top 10 most contaminated foods list and perhaps make those choices be their organic food choices, whereas some foods have less likelihood of being contaminated with pesticides. So that is one way, and that is somewhat what I do just personally, is I choose to buy organic in foods that are more contaminated. Secondly, take advantage of home gardening and farmers markets. I think we're very fortunate here in the state of Wisconsin to have some excellent farmers markets. I'm just going to even put in a plug for the Madison Farmers Market. It's probably one of the finest in the country. So being able to take advantage of the organic produce that's available locally makes it more affordable. And encouraging people to freeze produce in the summer for winter use or other methods of preservation is another option too. But it's an excellent question. I think it's one we're working on. Thank you.
The question about what kinds of foods to eat. Why don't we talk a little bit in general about what sorts of foods should be emphasized and maybe some that should be avoided?
In terms of what I like to start when I'm starting to work with either a group or a private client, I always start with the fruits and vegetables. This is one, statistically, we know that most Americans aren't up to the 5 servings a day, and we've graduated from 5 servings to, you know, actually 7 to 9 servings of fruits and vegetables a day. So I will always start with this particular food group and encourage, teach, do some problem solving with clients and or groups to get them to include more fruits and vegetables And I often like to teach a variety of fruits and vegetables. I had a client one time who said he got his 5 servings of fruits and vegetables, but what he was eating every day was carrots and oranges, and there was no variety. So once I convince people they need to increase the number of servings, we have to look at increasing the variety. So this is where I like to start.
Okay, are there any specific vegetables and fruits that have been shown through research to be to contain things that are more helpful at preventing cancer than others?
I never teach that there is one fruit or one vegetable or even one category that's better than another. We know that the most important thing is eating a variety of fruits and vegetables, because you can take any class of fruit or vegetable and find cancer-fighting properties, or as we call them, phytochemicals. Those are plant chemicals. So I think it's important to teach variety, and that can often be achieved by teaching. Look for different colors. A variety of colors is a good way to look at your overall intake.
Well, let me just get this in. I had always heard that cabbage and broccoli were two things that you should try and eat more of, because they have some properties that are superior to other vegetables. Is that a myth, or is that really true?
It's not a myth. It's true that we call them cruciferous vegetables, or as my husband will fondly say, the gassy vegetables, broccoli, cauliflower, cabbage, that type of thing, do have cancer-fighting properties. But again, so do berries, such as blueberries, raspberries, and strawberries. Some of the dark green, and the dark orange or yellow vegetables are also have very powerful cancer fighters. So it's really hard. I think some of the original work goes back to the cruciferous vegetables, but we now know that really the lots of fruits and vegetables have cancer-fighting properties.
Well, let's take a call from Shirley in Madison. Shirley, good morning. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. I heard earlier this week on the radio that it was a large study learned that diabetics lose a great deal of thiamine and need extra supplements of thiamine. Could you just tell me what foods contain thiamine and what would be best? I'll take the answer off the air.
Actually, that question actually isn't quite relevant to the cancer topic. And actually, thiamine is one of the B-complex vitamins. And personally, I'm going to have to plead here that I don't know anything about that study, so I would prefer not to address that right now.
Yeah, we'll let that go. Diabetes isn't on the schedule this hour. Maybe we can, a note to our producers, maybe we can do a show about what things diabetics should eat and how diet and diabetes are related. And diabetes is an entirely different class of disease than cancer anyway. Let me give the phone numbers again and encourage people to give us a call. We're just coming up to the bottom of the hour, so we'll be taking a break for some news, and you have a chance to think about what you'd like to ask. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. It's a toll-free number, 263-1890. If you're in Madison, please use that number. You can send us an email, talk@wpr.org. I'll throw out some questions to the audience. Do you get enough vegetables? If not, why not? What are the reasons why you might not get enough servings of vegetables? Or how are you managing to get the amount of grains that you need? How do you work fruits and vegetables into your diet if you're one of those who doesn't really love them? I have to confess, I love broccoli, but I do not like cauliflower. So I also like cabbage, but probably have it more often in sauerkraut than fresh. The topic today is how your diet and weight can affect whether or not you get cancer. So stick around and stay tuned as we continue to talk with our expert. I'm John Munson, sitting in for Joy Cardine, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. It's 6:35. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson, sitting in for Joy Cardine. Joy will be back on Monday. Well, this hour, we're talking about the relationship between poor eating habits and obesity to increased cancer risk. And Let me give the phone numbers and let people know that there are some lines that are available if you want to call in right now. 800-642-1234 is a toll-free number. 800-642-1234. If you're in Madison, you can save us a buck or two by calling 263-1890, 263-1890. My guest this hour is Margaret Allen, oncology dietitian at Columbia St. Mary's in Milwaukee. She joins us from Milwaukee. She's also a volunteer with the American Cancer Society, and she is speaking to us in that capacity this morning. One of the things I found on the website that we mentioned earlier and that we will repeat again later in the program, there's a little kind of an information sheet that's titled, "Do I Really Want It?" And it says, sometimes you do, and that's okay, but if you're on the fence about whether to give in to that craving, here's what you'd need to do in terms of exercise. To burn the calories in a 4.5-ounce pina colada, you'd have to walk 2.5 miles. 2 slices of thin crust pepperoni pizza, you'd have to walk 5 miles. If you had a meal that included an extra large cheeseburger with sauce, an extra large french fry, and an extra large soda, you'd have to walk 15 miles. Well, I don't think very many of us are going to walk 15 miles after a hamburger feast at a local fast food restaurant, so perhaps that's counterindicated. Let's go back to the phones and take a call from Marcy in Cushing. Good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead with your question.
Good morning. I'd like to ask your guest today if the importance of choosing fruits and vegetables that are organic, or be careful how maybe pesticides or other supplements that might have absorbed into the choices that I make, and how would that greatly enhance or affect my choices?
It's a good question. With regards to organic, and I think our first caller asked somewhat the same question,
yes.
But let me just talk for a minute here. I think it's important to understand that you need to make the choices that are important to you. You need to be able to afford the food that you're buying, and I know that is
okay.
A concern for a lot of people with regards to organic.
Mm-hmm.
And I referred our first caller to the Food and Drug Administration, which does publish a list of the top 10 most contaminated foods that we know are being brought into the country.
Okay.
For instance, Chilean grapes might be one example. And periodically this list is updated, so that may or may not be accurate at this point. At one point they were on there. So, for instance, if that would be the case, I might choose to buy organic grapes. But homegrown sweet corn or carrots or other products, if they're not on the list, then I may choose to not buy them organic. In terms of what foods are absorbing when they're in the ground, some of that is an unknown. You know, we don't always know, you know, in terms of rainfall or water runoff, what is in our soil. We do know that the cancer-fighting properties of the foods are not altered, and often it is felt by well-renowned researchers that if it's a choice between not eating a food and eating it and taking a chance on a minute quantity of a pesticide, the cancer-fighting properties far outweigh any risk of a minute amount of a pesticide. So it's important to understand that's how potent these plant chemicals are, that it's better that you eat them than not eat them for fear of a perhaps minute quantity of a pesticide.
And fresh versus frozen then also, or do they lose the cancer-fighting qualities are still there even if frozen?
Correct.
Okay.
I will teach fresh, frozen, canned, and dried. All of the fruits and vegetables have merit when they're even preserved, fresh, frozen, or dried. So, yes, we're happy to report that the cancer-fighting properties are preserved. So make many choices, and you can choose fruits and vegetables in many different forms. Especially in the winter here in Wisconsin, I encourage a lot of the frozen or dried fruits and vegetables as alternatives to fresh if they become cost prohibitive.
All right. Thanks for the call. Let's go next to Bill in Lancaster. Bill, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Hello?
Thank you for making it. Yes, you're on.
Yeah, my question is, if you go on one of these cleansing diets where you're not eating any solid food, can that help with cancer prevention?
I am not a big proponent of a cleansing diet. Basically, these diets just encourage, as I understand them, a lot of liquids. It's basically a fast. And often for anyone who may have other health problems, for instance, any cardiac issues, diabetes, et cetera, this can actually be dangerous. And we've not found that there is any benefit to these diets other than if they're used for brief periods of time in an otherwise healthy adult, there may not be any consequences. But in terms of assisting with cancer prevention, there is nothing documented in any substantiated research that shows that they are of any benefit. So my first point is make sure that they'll do no harm. And secondly, brief periods of time in a healthy adult may be safe, but not of any cancer-fighting benefit.
Thanks for the call, Bill. Appreciate it. Here's a question. Going back to the difference between frozen and fresh vegetables, is there a difference in terms of how the body uses the nutrients in those, whether they're fresh or frozen?
No, there's no difference in how the body uses the nutrients. The real difference is in, I think, some of the frozen, I'll use a frozen fruit, for example. In the winter, I love to use frozen blueberries because fresh are, you know, basically cost prohibitive from my standpoint. And so when the berries thaw, they're not as, you know, pretty or solid as a fresh blueberry, and you may have to use them in a different way. But the cancer-fighting properties, the fiber content, those important components of the fruit are really not affected. And so our bodies are able to use them both the same, whether they're fresh or frozen.
I'll tell you, frozen blueberries work really well on cereal, and they'll thaw out in the milk pretty quickly.
Yep, and I love them mixed with, you know, in cereal and into, you know, pancakes or muffins. I have no problem using the frozen.
Yeah, unfortunately for me, the sour cream blueberry muffin is a preferred source. Let's go next to Dan in Madison. Dan, good morning. Thanks
good morning.
For calling.
Hi, thanks. I guess my question was if your guest was familiar with the China study and what her opinion is of a vegan or vegetarian diet. And then my second question was unrelated, is about the method of cooking. I've heard bad things about microwaving and if it's a lot better to just eat raw food or if you should bake it or what.
Okay. The first question, I've not read the China study. I've not read the actual report on that. But I can address the vegan or vegetarian diet. The diet that we're teaching now for cancer risk reduction is basically a plant-based diet. In other words, if someone chooses not to be a vegan or a vegetarian, when we look at their plate, we would look at one-fourth of the plate should have the protein source on the plate. So three-fourths of the plate really should be whole grains or fruits and vegetables. So the plant-based diet isn't entirely a vegetarian or vegan diet. Now, in terms of vegetarianism and vegan, we want to make sure that someone is getting adequate sources of protein. If they do eliminate dairy, we want to make sure they're getting an adequate source of calcium, especially in the younger population. But certainly a vegan or vegetarian diet can be very adequate and, you know, a very powerful cancer fighter. So I absolutely would support that particular lifestyle. Your second question with regards to the method of cooking, everything that I've read, and I've been in the business a really long time, does not support that microwaving food alters it in any harmful way. Periodically, this urban myth creeps into my world. You know, it'll show up on my professional websites and that kind of thing. But there is nothing that has ever documented that that method of cooking, opposed to, you know, raw or baking or steaming, is harmful. I do encourage people, though, you know, when they're cooking food, to not overcook it because you want to preserve the fiber content. I also would encourage people, you know, if they're boiling their vegetables, it's kind of an older method of cooking, I'm realizing now, but not to pour off the water because you do leach out some of the vitamins and minerals.
We're at weather time. We'll take a break, and then we'll come back and take some more calls. And there's a line available for you at 800-642-1234 or 263-1890. I'm John Munson. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's just about 6:48. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson in for Joy Cardine this morning. Joy will be back on Monday. Well, after 2 o'clock on Talk of the Nation Science Friday, find out what you need to know about the 2007 Farm Bill and how it affects what you eat, plus just what does it take to eat food that's locally grown. That's after 2 o'clock this afternoon on Science Friday. This hour, we're talking about what you eat and its relationship to your cancer risk, and not just what you eat, but how much you eat. And we have callers who are waiting to join us, so let's go back to the phones and talk to Jason in Madison. Jason, good morning. Jason, you need to turn your radio down.
Hello?
Yeah, Jason, turn your radio down. I can hear it in the background. That'd be
okay.
Great.
Okay, all right.
There
good
we go.
Good morning, Ken. How are you doing?
Pretty good so far.
How are you doing?
What's your
there?
Question?
Yes, as a dietitian, you're aware of the cancer rates as a dietitian, you're aware of the cancer rates affecting diet. I guess I'm wondering, what is your organization doing to combat obesity when it regards economics, when people can't afford vegetables without chemicals, or they can't have that access to vegetables. So what is your society doing, your organization doing to make these people aware or conscious of the fact that they should make that special effort?
I'm hoping I'm understanding your question correctly, Jason. Are you talking about, you know, the organic issue with regards to vegetables or just vegetables in general?
Well, I guess I'm talking about vegetables in general.
Okay.
That certain areas do not have access to vegetables, or it's easier to go to the store and get a bag of chips than it is to get an orange. It's easier to go get a beer than it is to get a banana. You know, I don't understand this.
I'm not sure where you're doing your grocery shopping, but the stores that I'm familiar with do have these things available. And I think it's a matter of deciding that these things are important in your life. And part of what my organization, which is the American Dietetic Association, plus the American Cancer Society, we want to make people aware of the importance of making informed decisions. You can make a conscious effort to go into a store and buy beer and potato chips. And if you take 10 steps in either direction at that same grocery store, you're going to find access to canned, fresh, frozen, or dried fruits and vegetables. Our job, my job, is to heighten awareness of the importance of making these choices, plus trying to work with people who may have, you know, diverse needs within their family. You know, you may be dealing with grandma or grandpa who have eating issues, with young children who are fussy eaters, you know, teenagers, working moms and dads. That's part of the challenge of my job, is to make sure that people are aware of how they can make these better choices and how they can have the things available in the home. You know, for instance, it may be a matter of having boxes of dried raisins that are readily available as a snack food for children. Teaching adults that grabbing an orange or an apple, if it's in the refrigerator, is a better choice than the bag of potato chips. So I think part of the problem here is heightening awareness of the importance of making these choices. The choices are readily available, and I agree there are certain times of the year when, for instance, as I mentioned before, fresh blueberries are not on my budget, but frozen blueberries are very affordable in the middle of winter. So, you know, it's a matter of educating on my half, and it's a matter of you yourself becoming an informed consumer and understanding the importance of making those choices.
I think what the caller was getting at, though, is that in a lot of low-income areas, there isn't the local store that someone has access to because they may not have a car or other form of transportation to get to the grocery store, so they're walking. And we don't have the kind of neighborhood grocery stores that we used to have that had some vegetables and things. They're going to a convenience store, mm-hmm. and they're picking up a can of, some packaged dinner or something like that. It's just easier to go to a store like that because there are so many of them, and buy a bag of chips or a 12-pack of beer or something like that, and there won't be any vegetables, fresh vegetables available. So, and that's out of your area, but I think that's kind of what the caller was getting at a little more, and that's a bigger problem and deserves another show. Let's go next to Shelley in Westfield.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for calling.
Yes, I'd like to know which cancers are most correlated with obesity.
I would have to say, and I'm going to give you just a tad bit of information here. There are two things in our bodies that can promote cancer growth when coupled with obesity. The first one is estrogen. Fat cells produce a form of estrogen called estradiol that promotes the rapid division of cells, increasing the chances that a random genetic error that may occur while cells are replicating. And these often will fuel what we call the hormone-driven cancers, that being breast, prostate, and some of the uterine cancers. We also know that colon cancer is affected by obesity also. There are increased risks of colon cancer. The second thing in our body is insulin, and fat that's centered around the abdomen may increase insulin and insulin-like growth factors in the blood, which also increase cancer risk. So, we know that these two things in the body can increase the cancer risk, primarily some of the hormone-driven cancers, as I mentioned, and then colon cancer is another one.
You mentioned earlier that when you're cooking vegetables, if you're boiling them, you shouldn't throw out the water. Well, so I cook my broccoli in water. What am I supposed to do with the water?
Well, two things here. First of all, try steaming your broccoli so there's a minimal amount of water needed. And secondly, and this is a little bit of an old-fashioned kind of a use for that water, is to make soup with it. And I know my grandmother used to save the water, and she'd have a container in the refrigerator, and that's what she would use to make soup with. That was her stock. So that's one option. I think most people now, though, are really into the steaming vegetables as opposed to boiling them.
Let's take a call next from Nancy in Bessemer, Michigan. Good morning. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. My question is regarding, I've been listening to the program, and I know it's cancer-related, but when I go to the grocery store to buy fish, which I like to eat, I noticed like the other day there was haddock, and it was imported from China. And I've been seeing things on TV that have been turning me off about the way they do their fish and so on. And while I know that haddock is an ocean fish, I was just wondering, and there was another lady by me, and she was just as skeptical as I was, is it safe to eat the fish it's packed in the United States, but still, I'm just not at ease when I'm eating fish, and I watch my diet.
I understand your reluctance because there has been so much in the press about some of the foods from China being tainted or contaminated. And I think this needs to be an individual choice. Two issues here. One of is that some of the fish that we may consider safe or more comfortable with may be more expensive because of, the way it's caught or raised or processed. And so it does become, somewhat of a financial concern. But overriding that is the fear of contamination. And I think if that is something that is of concern to you, then perhaps choosing not to buy that fish and perhaps choosing another form of lean protein as an alternative for, your menu that week would be more comfortable for you. And I think that needs to be an individual choice.
We're getting close to the end of the program, and I have got so many things I wanted to get to in this hour. Maybe you'll have to come back and do another show. One of the things that, and we've only got about a minute and a half left here. One of the things that we run into is that the pace of life in this country and perhaps in other countries around the world is such that we don't spend a lot of time in the kitchen preparing meals. We're on the go. We're grabbing a sandwich here or a burger there or something. And it's even in our workplace, there's all sorts of landmines to step on food-wise with vending machines and so forth. What suggestions would you have for people who are very busy to make better choices? And keep in mind, we've got about a minute left.
Okay. First of all, I think there are a lot of our fast food restaurants are getting the message finally and have many options available. Low-fat dairy products as alternatives to soda. Fresh apples and carrots and salads, grilled chicken entrees are also readily available. Choosing what condiments to put on your baked potato, for instance, is an option. I think for those of us who are doing some grocery shopping, if you shop with the fast food pace in mind, take advantage of prepackaged, for instance, baby carrots, fruit that's portable, dried fruit as an option, dry cereal as a snack. These also make excellent choices. So it's a matter of doing a little bit of thinking ahead of time, but with a list and a little bit of thought, and also checking out some of the information on the American Cancer Society's website with regards to making better choices is helpful.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Margaret Allen, for joining us this morning.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
And again, that website is cancer.org/greatamericans. This program was produced by Karen Prager with on-air production by Karen Prager. I'm John Munson, sitting in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.